WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. 5 years ago, baseball commissioner Bart Giamatti summarized his thoughts on the problem facing the major leagues with one word: mistrust. That's certainly true today as owners and players prepare for a strike which is expected to go into effect tonight at midnight. At issue is a salary cap. The owners want to put a ceiling on baseball salaries, claiming that some clubs can't afford to compete and pay high-priced players. On the other hand, players believe that a salary cap limits their ability to negotiate in a free market. Alan Sanderson is an economist at the University of Chicago, where he teaches a course called The Economics of Sports. We invited him on Fresh Air today to talk about the business of baseball. Sanderson says that in spite of what the owners say, owning a baseball franchise is a profitable venture.
About a week ago in the initial rounds of the labor negotiations or the public posturing, Major League Baseball said that 19 of the 28 teams were losing money, including the Chicago White Sox, here where I'm part of a season ticket group. Then that number was revised to 12 a few days ago. Financial World says that it's 5. My own opinion is they're getting close to the truth, which is the answer, 0. That on any reasonable measure, all 28 teams are profitable and viable enterprises. If that were not the case, you wouldn't see a franchise sell for $85 million. You wouldn't see 18 to 20 investor groups be willing to put up $95 million if they could have access to a new franchise in Major League Baseball. If the expected revenue stream down the road were negative, the selling price would be 0.
How does national baseball, professional baseball, how do they make their money? Looking at ticket sales, looking at the chicken sales at the stadium, looking at, which I happen to like a lot, looking at television rights, radio rights.
If one goes back 20 years, the largest source of revenue for Major League Baseball was in the form of tickets, ticket sales, and concessions. Then in the last 15 or 20 years, the proportion of their total income or revenues have changed significantly. And broadcasts, national and local broadcasts, now together, national plus local broadcasts, constitute right around 50% of Major League Baseball revenues. And half of that, say 25% of the total pie, is local TV broadcast, TV and radio, and half is national.
And then
the other half would be ticket sales, concessions, logo merchandise, and things of that nature.
And then adding up all the teams, what's the annual revenue from Major League Baseball?
I saw a number the other day where someone said, gave the figure of approximately $2 billion. Mm-hmm. It's a little under $2 billion, which is equivalent to the Fruit of the Loom company, to give you an example.
Okay. An interesting
baseball
example.
Baseball is not a big business. Uh-huh. They don't employ very many people, and their total revenues are really rather small.
But
as a society, we like to hear a lot about sports. And so they publicly, where the newspapers on radio or TV get a disproportionate amount of airtime compared with their impact on an economy.
So this strike in Major League Baseball, is this about too much money or too little money?
Good question. Given the current arrangements, it's not about too much or too little. Presumably, the owners have a cartel. It's a 28-member cartel. One thinks of it as a monopoly, but I think a cartel is probably the more appropriate configuration.
What's the difference between a cartel and a monopoly?
A monopoly means that there's just one owner or one okay. seller of a particular good. For instance, if Ross Perot owned all 28 teams, then he would be a monopoly. But there are 28 different franchises, 28 different owners, and they vary a little bit in terms of their own personal circumstances and the constraints and assets and so forth. So they act sometimes in unison, and they are able to act with one voice, and other times they act with 28 voices. But presume if they're acting well, they have set ticket prices and produced the number of baseball games in terms of number of franchises, number of games that maximizes their profits. After that, it's purely what the strike is about, is this intra-family squabble between owners and players as to who gets that revenue. Fans will pay it regardless. The amount, as long as the fan demand remains about what it is now, ticket prices are not going to be affected, will not go up or go down, no matter who prevails in the current labor dispute.
So Major League Baseball is exempt from any antitrust laws, is that right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And they also get some other advantages. It's not just antitrust. They have the legality of the reverse order draft system has been upheld, which provides them with the advantage of sort of player, indentured servitude for a period of time. And also they get tremendous subsidies from the states and local communities in which they operate for stadiums and tax breaks and things of this nature.
Do you think this should be busted? I mean, do you think this cartel should be busted open? Mm.
When you asked the question before, is there too much money or too little? And I said, given the current arrangements, it's about right. But it's the right thing is that, yes, we should have more competition in this industry. Baseball and other sports should lose their antitrust. Baseball should lose its antitrust exemption, and all professional sports should not get the same kind of economic privileges they get from our laws. And you would want more expansion. They're on the if one wants to talk about the availability of talent on the supply side or the fan demand on the demand side, we have enough interest and enough ability in the society to probably produce 40 to 60 Major League Baseball teams at a high level of play. That increased competition would mean more fans could see games. They would pay lower ticket prices. They would have a lot of other benefits. The current beneficiaries are the players and the owners.
Well, I go to a fair number of Phillies games, and mm-hmm. except for the World Series last year, the stands are maybe more than half empty. Mm-hmm. How can you say that there's enough interest to support 40 or 60 teams?
If one looks over time, say most of these teams are located in communities of a million or more. If one took a look at metropolitan areas now and said, how many metropolitan areas are there in the United States with a million? And suppose you use that as the bottom line.
Okay.
That it takes a million people to support a Major League Baseball team. I think there's demand to support somewhere on the order of 40 to 60. The fact that there are empty seats doesn't mean that there isn't fan demand. Hertz would have sometimes some percent of its fleet is idle, or sometimes salesmen at Marshall Fields in Chicago are not constantly ringing up merchandise. There is sort of excess capacity, if you define it the right way, in virtually all these industries.
Well, let's take a quick break and we'll talk some more. And my guest on Fresh Air today is University of Chicago economist Alan Sanderson. And we're talking about the impending baseball strike. He teaches a course on the economics of sports. We'll be back after a short break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Alan Sanderson, and he's an economics professor at the University of Chicago. Let me just ask you a general question about players' mm-hmm. salaries. Do you think that some players are paid too much?
No. It's difficult for the person on the street with a $20,000 salary or $50,000 salary to feel empathy for a Bobby Bonilla who makes right. $5 million, or in Chicago, a Frank Thomas who makes, or a Jack McDowell making in that neighborhood. And yet you want to say, are players paid relative to what they're worth to their franchises? If one goes back before 1972, the beginnings of free agency and salary arbitration and the formation of a fairly strong and effective players union, players on average were probably paid about 20% of what they were worth to their teams. About 80% of their value, what economists would call the marginal revenue product, was extorted from them by the owners. That number has now changed so that players are probably getting 80 to 85% of what they're worth currently with Major League teams. So in that measure, are they being overpaid? No. Are they being paid? Does their salary correspond to their performance? Yes, most econometric work done by economists suggests that, yes, there is a pretty good correlation between a player's performance and his salary.
So do you think the owners make too much money?
Yes. In your other question, do players make too much? There's one way in which players make too much money. And that's, and it relates to your question of, do owners make too much money? The issue is, if you have a monopoly, as the owners do, or this cartel, the owners benefit from that monopoly, and so do the players, because it generates higher revenues for the sport. And then you get, as I said, this intra-family fight between the players' union and the owners as to who gets those spoils. So in that regard, yes, the players, current major league players, get more than they would get if you had a freer and open market, in the same way owners get more than they would get in an open market.
Do you think the owners want to bust the players' union?
They would not be able to bust the players' union. I think the salary cap notion is their attempt to push things about as far as it could be pushed. And again, I don't want to say, here or elsewhere, that I am pro-player or pro-owner in this particular thing. There are faults with both sides in terms that the losers are fans and other individuals. So it's in some ways, as an economist, you don't line up strongly in favor of one group or another.
Well, you've talked, I guess, more about the faults with the owners, but mm-hmm. What do you see as the faults coming from the player side?
One of them is that the owners have made some mistakes as they went along, and the players have been able to capitalize on those. For example, the free agency would produce better salaries for the players. They would be paid closer to their market worth, and I applaud that. I think most economists would.
Can I just stop you there, just mm-hmm, for people that, mm-hmm, that don't mm-hmm. follow this game obsessively? Describe mm-hmm. free agency for us.
There are technical pieces of it, but what it says is that players at some point in their careers, whether it's 3 years or 6 years or 4 years, and it depends on, there are a lot of other strings attached, but that they are able to sell their services to any of the 28 teams. Before 1972, they were owned by one franchise. If they weren't happy with their salary, if they weren't happy with the playing conditions, they were not able to switch teams, as it were. Now they are able to say, I'm a free agent this year. I'm willing to entertain offers from any my own club as well as the other 27, and I can sell myself to the highest bidder. But what got added to free agency was the issue of salary arbitration, which means that a player in interim kinds of years can make a case for basing his salary not necessarily on the performance with his team as much as the performance of people in comparable situations. The shortstop for Team X can say, I'm as good as the shortstops for Team A, B, C, and D. This is what they make in revenue. Therefore, I should make the same. I think the combination of free agency and salary arbitration works to the owner's disadvantage in economic terms and shouldn't work to their disadvantage as much as it does.
As the strike goes on, and we're assuming it's going to happen, but it certainly looks that mm-hmm. way, as the strike goes on, who do you think is going to be hurt the most, the players or the owners, financially speaking? Whose pocketbook is hit hardest?
In some ways, I think the players, because their alternatives to play Major League Baseball, moving from one occupation to another or being withheld, are just, they're significant. As I say, you could work for one radio station yourself or another, but a player can't, if his choice is $5 million doing this or $100,000 doing that or $50,000 doing another thing, that's a tremendous difference. The owners, on the other hand, have... In many cases, in virtually all cases, outside business interests that are more important to them than the baseball team, they're able to absorb some losses. Both sides, in an ex-ante sense, both sides are going into this strike thinking that they will be better off for having held out than caving in.
Do you think fans
so
have...
It's a game theory kind of notion of, what's our expectation going in?
Do you think fans have any clout in this strike? I mean, you see signs, at some of the baseball games this week. Obviously, mm-hmm. The public rather upset that they're not going to be able to mm-hmm. watch Major mm-hmm. League Baseball. Do you think they have any clout?
I don't really think so. Fan boycotts are, if you look at the past history, not that my sympathies aren't there, but in many respects. But fans are just very difficult to organize. They're a largely, just unlikely group to, and they're too heterogeneous to organize. On the other hand, on the other side, you have, say, 70 million people who would buy Major League Baseball tickets. versus 28 owners versus 700 players. It's a lot easier to organize 28 people or to organize 700 people than it is to organize these vast audiences for the games. They're likely to be fickle as much as they're hurt, and in the end they will come back to the parks.
So what are you going to do besides if you can't go to see your, what do you want, your Cubs
the
fan?
White Sox.
Is that your White Sox?
Oh, no,
sorry.
Not a Cubs fan.
Okay.
No,
I mean, what are you going to do instead?
Well, actually, I as part of the season ticket group that I have, I chose all of my games before the 1st of August, figuring that there would be a strike. So
really?
In a sense, I was putting my money with in our group where my mouth was, and we're going on family vacation next week.
Okay.
So we'll go west and do some hiking, go to the beach.
Alan Sanderson, thank you very much for joining us on Fresh Air.
Certainly welcome, Marty.
Alan Sanderson is an economist at the University of Chicago. This is Fresh Air.